Good morning. Thank you all for coming here today. As many of you know, today the President is in Columbus, Ohio, at the groundbreaking of the 10,000th Recovery Act road project to get underway. As the administration kicks off Recovery Summer, a six-week-long focus on the surge in Recovery Act infrastructure projects that will be underway across the country in the coming months. One of the largest pieces of domestic legislation in recent memory, the Recovery Act was designed to jumpstart economic activity and prevent another Great Depression, and that's exactly what it has been doing. Despite the criticism and continued political wrangling around it, the evidence strongly suggests that the Recovery Act has been effective in reviving economic growth. We have seen, for example, a swing from an average GDP decline of roughly 6% on an annualized basis at the end of 2008 and beginning of 2009 to an average growth rate of more than 4% a year later, which is the largest one-year swing in GDP growth in three decades. But what is perhaps most striking is what hasn't happened because of the Recovery Act. Even though this initiative is so large and novel, we have not seen any substantial incidences of fraud and abuse. And for that, there's much credit to go around. We first have to credit the hard work of Earl Devaney and the Recovery Board, who not only has been wholly committed to the sound implementation of the bill, but is also using new tools to direct and root out fraud. I want to demonstrate one of those tools. Both the Vice President and I have had the opportunity to see this in action in real time. You're going to see a demo instead. This is the kind of tool that has been widely used in the private sector, but is novel for the federal government to be using in order to try to detect and prevent fraud. This is a screenshot of the room within the immediate vicinity of this building at which the Recovery Board works to detect electronically indicators of potential fraud using very sophisticated techniques. And let me give you a sense of what those are like. Traditionally, if we were going to look at a potential contractor to obtain a contract with the federal government, the kinds of things that would be examined are whether the contractor had a valid street address, whether there was any outstanding federal debt, and what have you. Only about that contractor directly. What the new tools allow us to do is to build in a much richer set of relationships that can be correlated with potential fraudulent activity. So, for example, subcontractors and prime contractor relationships, subsidiaries, information about the management officials at the company, a much richer set of data and information than traditionally had been applied. Give you an example of what happens in, again, in real time using these tools. At the bottom, you have the federal government. At the top yellow box, you have that potential contractor. The tools allow us to trace all of the flows of dollars from the federal government to that contractor, and also then to build out subsidiaries and affiliates of the contractor, which you see happening here. And then those are combined into a more aggregate picture of flows from the federal government through all the various entities with which this company is dealing, and all of the affiliates and subsidiaries of the company itself. What that allows you to do is then, for example, to see whether many of these associated companies are located in a suspicious pattern. So for example, here are five companies. And as you see the screenshot coming closer and closer, you see that all five of those companies are located at one house with a swimming pool and boat. And one might believe that those five companies are not all independent of one another and that there might be connections that should be examined among and between them. This is the kind of thing that is now being used by the Recovery Board. So with that full picture, what you can see is in the blue bar, the blue boxes there, that was the traditional way of evaluating the company. No significant indicator of any potential problem. With the more sophisticated tools, there are various red boxes that are popping up. For example, that set of companies that were so closely, that were located at the same house. This would then flag for investigation potential for fraud or abuse in a way that was not possible using the older techniques. So this is, again, one demonstration of the tools that are now being used to help minimize fraud and abuse in the Recovery Act. Technology, however, is not a panacea by itself. The other critical ingredient is leadership, not only from Earl Devaney, but also from Sheriff Joe, the Vice President, who has made it his mission to make sure that the Recovery Act is implemented swiftly and effectively. I think many people may not know how aggressive the Vice President has been. He's been in almost continuous contact with mayors, governors, and other officials, making it 100% clear that he won't tolerate any corners being cut or shady dealings. And he's made it known again and again in cabinet meetings and with other government agencies that we really mean business about zero tolerance for fraud and abuse through the Recovery Act. All in all, I think his leadership has made a huge difference with the implementation of the Recovery Act in preventing an economic collapse, and obviously on a host of other economic and domestic policy issues. It is therefore my pleasure to introduce to you Sheriff Joe, our Vice President, Mr. Biden.
Thank you. Well, if I'm Sheriff Joe, I got one hell of a posse in Earl Devaney. And let me start off by thanking Earl and the Recovery Board. You know, at the front end of this, there was a lot of discussion about, and I'll get into this in little detail in a minute, a lot of discussion about how could you possibly have something this big implemented in this short a time without there being an amazing amount of waste and fraud and abuse in the process. But I'll get back to that. Before I go into that, though, again, I want to thank Peter because, you know, Peter and the President and the whole team, we meant it when we said that we're going to revolutionize the way Washington does business. But before I get into the remarks on that, there's one point I have to make. I want to comment on something that's news and critical right now, literally as we speak, up in the United States Senate. And I think, quite frankly, it's a shameful example of business as usual. More than a decade ago, the Congress set up a formula that governs how doctors get paid by the Medicare program. Or put another way, how could we be assured that that seniors would have access to doctors wherever they lived and know that those doctors, and therefore, had to be know they'd be fairly compensated for their time and their effort. And so we set up this system, and the intent was to slow the growth of Medicare costs, but the result has been these proposed payment cuts that were built into this formula have resulted in, or will result in, America's doctors year after year, if we don't keep it going, finding themselves constantly wondering about whether or not their cost of doing business is going to skyrocket their pay that they get for the work they've done, even though we've cut overall costs, is going to decline to the point they may not participate. This year, a majority of the United States Congress decided that in raw terms, that we should continue this program and make sure doctors get paid, therefore patients get treated. But this year, a majority wanted to prevent this pay cut, that is, keep this program going. The pay cut that would undoubtedly force an awful lot of doctors to see an awful lot of patients out there, Medicare patients. And ultimately, last night, though, the Republicans blocked. They blocked a fiscally responsible agreement to protect doctors, but more importantly, protect seniors, by allowing this 21% pay cut to go into effect. As of today, doctors are going to see that their Medicare payments jeopardizing the ability of them to see seniors is going to be kicked into motion. The 21% cut's going into effect. This time, the other party decided that they weren't going to participate in trying to deal with this straight up. And so, I urge my colleagues on the Republican side to put politics aside for a minute here and let the Senate vote. Let the United States Senate vote on behalf of seniors in this country, allowing their doctors to get paid fairly. As a nation, we have a responsibility to fix this problem so that our doctors can get paid for the life-saving services they provide for our seniors. And Republican leaders, I would respectfully suggest, have an obligation and responsibility to stop walking away from these needs. Stop playing brinksmanship and politics with this every time it rolls around and fix this problem. I would add that the failure to deal with this problem adds to the anxiety of seniors all over the United States of America and complicates the planning for medical practices. You know, my mom has passed away, but a lot of you have senior parents now. Even though my mother had four children who would take care of her needs if there weren't Medicare and would be able to do that, my mom, when we'd come up to these spots, she'd grab me and she'd live with me and say, "Joey, I mean, am I going to be able to see my doctor?" If you think I'm kidding, go back and ask your mothers or fathers if they're alive and they're on Medicare. They get it. And it's just not fair to keep this anxiety level constantly in play here. And so the President and I are committed to a long-term solution that balances our fiscal responsibilities with the responsibility of the senior citizens of this country. And we've already taken significant steps to slow the growth of Medicare costs through the health insurance reform proposal that's passed, but not by targeting doctors and seniors, but by eliminating the 50% of the waste, fraud, and abuse in the system that exists by 2012. This is only going to strengthen Medicare, and it's going to save taxpayers money. But to continue this little brinksmanship game, you know, and increasing the anxiety of so many people is just not the responsible way, in my view, for us to go. But in a sense, it's kind of what I'm here to talk about today when I said about the right way to deal with Medicare costs here. And that is, how do you get fraud and waste out of the system, out of our programs, to truly make the government work as the American people have not come to expect it to work, but want it to work? And when we passed the Recovery Act, when the Congress passed the Recovery Act into law shortly after we took office, in the midst of the worst recession since the Great Depression, the President and I had several clear goals. The first was to save or create jobs today. The second was to lay a foundation for longer-term prosperity by investing in those new building blocks that are going to provide that prosperity in the 21st century. And to do it right and to do it well. And to do it right and do it well means do it without meeting the expectations of so many that there'd be massive fraud and abuse and waste of government. Now, you know, here today, Congresswoman Melissa Bean is here today and also is representative. Well, Kurt is from Oregon, so that means everything's good out there. But both of these guys were responsible for getting this thing done and responsible for making sure we do it the right way. They've been on top of this the whole time. And again, what we talked about, people don't think about this so much, I understand it, is wasn't just to make this program work, but what were we going to learn from the administering of this program? Earl Devaney sat in my office when the President asked him to head up this independent recovery board, and I assure you it is independent. And Earl sat there in our first meeting, and I turned to Earl and I said, "Now look, there's bound to be something that's going to go wrong here. I just ask you a favor. Let me be the first to know so I can announce what mistakes we made." And he turned to me and said, "That's a novel idea." And so that's what that Kurt and Melissa have been about, too. We want to make this work and make people have increase the faith people have in that what we're doing. And we also wanted to protect against any and all cases of waste and fraud and abuse so that the tax dollars got exactly where they're supposed to go. Now, the public has placed a lot of trust in all of us who hold public office here in Washington, and we pledge to repay that trust by being uncharacteristically responsible here because we wanted to change the paradigm here. After more than a year of implementing the Recovery Act, the largest investment in a 1.5-2-year period of any investment the federal government's ever made, nearly $800 billion. I can proudly say, not because of me, but because so much good work out there, that we're not only creating jobs, we're not only are we spurring growth of new and emerging industries, we're not only increasing the gross domestic product or contributing to that, but we're doing it responsibly. We're doing it transparently, and we're doing it with real accountability. and with the help of the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board under the stellar leadership of Earl, we've worked very hard to make sure that we keep that commitment. You know, there have been in normal parlance, checks have been sent to over 170,000 contractors, prime contractors, and subcontractors. So the federal government has written out 170,000 checks to 170,000 companies or individuals or partnerships that have been engaged in Recovery Act projects. In fact, in April, I rolled out a presidential memorandum that the president had written saying that in the strongest possible terms that we wanted accountability from every single one of these people. And if, in fact, there were not getting reports on time or the reports weren't being filed as required, that we should take every action possible legally under our power to, after giving assistance, impose sanctions and freezing those funds. Thus far, the IG responsible for Recovery Act oversight and the Recovery Board have received out of the 170,000, in effect, checks in normal English, in the way most Americans would think about it, checks that got sent out, they received about 3,059 complaints alleging that there was something shady about the way the check was spent, the project, et cetera. And currently, there are a total of 317 open investigations. Now, let me put this in perspective. 170,000 transactions, 317 open investigations. That's 0.2% allegation of fraud. Now, that doesn't mean we might not have missed something somewhere along the way, but as transparent as all this has been, Earl has everyone from, you know, the lady who lives in the corner where the crosswalk's being put in, looking out there and counting, and it says on the website there's six guys employed and there's only one showing up, or that they really didn't put the lines on. Never has this happened before. So I just want to point out, I think it's really remarkable that a program this size has worked that well as it relates to the amount of fraud that's even been alleged, 0.2%. Now, look, you remember everyone said it was impossible to administer a program this size without massive, massive fraud. And I personally want to thank the mayors and the governors and the folks in the locales, and I know the congresspersons have been on top of them as well. I literally once a week speak to somewhere between 4 and 7 governors for almost an hour, and the same I do the next hour. I do somewhere between 9 and 15 mayors or county executives. I've now spoken to every single governor, I believe, at least twice, some 3 times. I was on the phone yesterday with 5 governors, Republican and Democrat, and they know how intently I feel about this being done right. And there's a simple reason. Everybody thought the president was placing confidence in me, calling me Sheriff Joe. Well, I was raised by a father who used to place confidence in me for a simple reason. So we know he would say, Joey, you're responsible, so I know who to hold accountable. So when these governors say, thank you for being so responsive, you can call any governor, any question they have, we get them an answer in 24 hours. If we don't get it in 24 hours, we're back to them in 24 hours, tell them when we'll get it. And they're saying, well, we've never had this kind of response. It's pure self-interest because I'm responsible for this program. And so, but I'm joking a little bit about it, but that's what we're trying to instill in a new ethic here in the federal government. Individuals, all of us being personally responsible at every level for making sure we handle the taxpayers' dollars well. Because everyone knows how seriously we're taking this, and because of the sophisticated tools that you've just seen an example of here today, so far, we're not over yet. Could happen. So far, the dog hadn't barked. And we're going to keep that dog in a cage, God willing. And we're going to be vigilant about implementing the remainder of the act. Now, as Peter and I have said from the beginning, we hope this act becomes a template for how we deal with future spending programs. I have the great privilege of being able to call cabinet meetings on a fairly regular basis to implement this. And as Peter will tell you, the cabinet members are seized with how serious he is about this and how serious I am about it. And the very interesting thing is that at the very beginning, we both talked with the cabinet about the following. I not only want this act to roll out in a way that it works, produces what was intended, and no fraud and abuse in it, but I said at the front end, and we talked with Earl about this, I want us to do this well enough that when the act is finished, it becomes a template for future federal programs that dispense monies to states, localities, and individuals. And that's one of the reasons why things are working so well right now, is that because of this transparency and accountability that we've demanded, it's created a level of public trust and it created a sense of urgency on the part of federal officials and state and local officials as well. And that trust is vital for any large government program. Now, as Peter mentioned, when the President asked me to be in charge of this act, he referred to me as sheriff, which was new to me, but I'm no sheriff. But I know full well the obligations we have to the American people after serving in the Senate for as long as I did, and that we shouldn't just be looking at the Recovery Act, not just the Recovery Act. We've seen how strict accountability and transparency can work in one specific program now, larger than any other, but we've seen how it can work. And now we have to use that as a model and employ it across the entire federal spectrum. If our efforts to make government work better are going to take hold, this kind of attitude has to take root in the federal government. Each year, the federal government wastes millions of taxpayers' dollars by either improperly sending payments to individuals, individuals or shouldn't get them, to organizations to get them, to contractors. There were payments made the wrong amount, payments made to the wrong persons, payments made for the wrong reason. In 2009, studies show that improper payments by the federal government that shouldn't have gone out totaled $110 billion. That's $110 billion of taxpayers' money that went to people who is not necessarily fraudulent, mistaken, went to the wrong person, went to a person who didn't deserve it, or went for the wrong reason. And so that is absolutely unacceptable. And now now that we know that we have the tools like this and other tools, but this is a very, very critical tool, we want to make sure that we apply this essentially government-wide. We're starting first with the Centers for Medicare and Medicine and Medicaid Services. Combined, Medicare and Medicaid has about $65 billion in improper payments in FY 2009, including about $47 billion in Medicare alone. Now, look, I served in the Senate a long time. The handy tool in the past used to be, well, how are you going to do that? We're going to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. It was a way to avoid responsibility. But we mean it. We're not talking, this is not a political catchphrase. We have, as a consequence of the leadership of the man in front of me and the man behind me, we have begun to put in place the tools to follow up on the commitment to really go after waste, fraud, and abuse. No businessman or businesswoman would put up with the waste that in their company if they found out what we found out. And it erodes their bottom line, just like it erodes the bottom line not only of our budget, not only of our balance sheet, but erodes the bottom line in terms of public confidence. And so we think that, especially with regard to Medicare and Medicaid, that it's which makes life better for millions of people, it's time that we're hammering at that bottom line and go get those savings that are now being absolutely wasted. The tool Peter showed you is going to be used to make sure that these programs work effectively, efficiently, and quite frankly, serving as a deterrent. The more docs, the more people involved in, and it's not all docs, involved providing medical services engaged in waste and fraud, the more know about this, the less inclined they're going to be. I can remember when they come out, you know, Medicare provides for oxygen. And I can remember the deal, I won't go into the woman's name, a friend of mine at home telling me that they came out and had her walk around her dining room table once and said, oh, no, you really need oxygen. You really need this badly. So what happens is she, you know, Medicare was getting billed for what turned out to be over a couple of years, thousands of dollars. She no more needed that oxygen than she needed to fly. She had other problems, but that wasn't the problem. So it's again, the more people realize, the more we can advertise, and that's why I'm thankful the press is here, the more they know that we are not only intent, not only we have sheriffs, we have weapons. We have weapons that we didn't have or didn't use before. So we're going to make it easier for GMS to screen providers and contractors, and we now know how to take a second look. It's not just Medicare and Medicaid. We need to do a better job stopping waste and fraud across the government spectrum. So listen to this. Over the past 3 years, federal auditors have told us that the government paid out benefits totaling more than $180 million to approximately 20,000 Americans who were dead. $180 million paid out to roughly 20,000 dead Americans. Pretty good. They say there is life after death. I guess so. You're getting a check. The government also paid out more than $230 million in benefits to approximately 14,000 fugitive felons or felons who are in jail who aren't eligible to the benefits. In fact, GAO will soon come out with a report detailing the LIHEAP program and the waste under that, the program that helps the elderly and poor heat their homes in the winter. States are making millions of dollars in erroneous payments, some of which are going to people who have claimed that individuals are actually dead or incarcerated or living in their homes. Now, again, I don't think that's intentional on the part of the states, but we now are going to not only commit, but have the tools to be able to make real inroads there. And so that money is not going to families who need to heat their homes. And every year, what do we have a debate about? We have a debate about whether we should help those people who really need the help, and they point to the cost. If we're able to point to the way in which we are eliminating the waste and the fraud and the accidental payments, it's going to make it a lot easier for a guy like me who thinks we should be helping those folks and our congressional friends to actually help them. And there's more. There are times when one agency suspends or even bars a contractor and another agency turns around and hires that same contractor for the same job, because there's not a whole lot of communications across the line. This is, again, it happens in corporations, it happens in businesses. The bigger the businesses, the bigger the enterprises, it happens. But again, with Earl's leadership, we are decided that we are really going to take a bite out of that. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and the problem ends up being both hands get tied, and we don't get anything done. To cut this waste and make this information easily available for all government agencies, the President is issuing a memorandum today creating a do not pay list. And that's literal. I know it sounds strange. You'd think this has already occurred. But do not pay list that's going to go out to all the federal agencies. While that is being set up, the memorandum issued today will require agencies to review current prepayment procedures and ensure they are reviewing all available database material before they release any federal funds. And here's what that means across the programs, and I will end with this. One, we're making sure that payments are no longer going to the deceased. Sounds ridiculous even to say it. We're making sure the projects aren't going to suspended or barred contractors. We're making sure that we're not cutting checks to people who owe the federal government money themselves. We're making sure the IRS doesn't give tax credits and send payments to people who try to defraud the government. We're making sure that benefits aren't flowing to individuals and businesses who have been excluded from being able to participate in federal health care programs. And we're making sure the federal loans are granted to individuals who are eligible for the loan and who have a strong enough credit for us to be able to have some reason to believe they can pay back the loan. Now, look, this stuff seems obvious on its face. I know part of the reason why some suggest that maybe we shouldn't come out here and do this is, well, you know, the voters will go, my God, I mean, isn't that happening already? But they know. The voters are a lot smarter. The American people are a lot smarter than either political party gives them credit for. And we want you to know we know, too. We know, too. And we're going to do everything in our power, and we think we have the tools now to be able to take a real bite out of this. No longer is it acceptable to take taxpayers' money, put it in the wrong hands, and use it for the wrong responses. Now, our success as a government rests, in my view, perhaps more than anything, on public support for what we do and the public trust in how we do it. And I'll conclude with this. I don't think, you know, there's a lot of talk sometimes you hear in the talking head shows about, you know, the American people don't have a heart. They've lost their heart. They don't care about helping people who are in need or sections of the country that don't. Let me tell you, their heart's as big as it's ever been in our history. What they doubt is the efficacy of the government's efforts to handle their hard-earned tax dollars in very difficult circumstances. That's what they doubt. And therefore, they say no. Therefore, they say no. This is a really important step we're taking. I really believe that over time, as we continue to plow away at this and develop new tools, it will not only make these initiatives run more efficiently, deny criminals the ability to take advantage, but it will also instill additional confidence in the American people to know that when they want to help their fellow Americans who are in trouble, or the elderly, or the young, or the poor, or the disabled, that they are willing to do it because they know the money is going to get to where it was intended. So I conclude, and I apologize for taking so much time, but in this hot room. I want to thank Earl again and his board. I want to thank Peter, who's been incredible. I want to thank the mayors and county executives and all those public officials who are finally beginning collectively to conclude that not only shouldn't we do something, we now have additional tools, and we're going to build on that toolkit to make sure that we clamp down on this. Thank you very much, I appreciate you all being here. Thank you, Peter.